This is Within and Between, a podcast about the methods and meta-science behind developmental science. Hi, it's Jessica Logan.
And it's Sarah Hart.
And this is an episode of Within and Between.
Hello.
You have found yourself, once again, in our presence, and we're happy you're here.
Yes, thank you for joining us on today's fun topic I think people feel like they have a handle on, but actually maybe have lots of questions about.
Yeah, I think that's a good description of this. You know, today, that actually describes many statistical concepts.
That's true.
Many of the things that we talk about on this show. But today we're going to talk about mediation.
Mediation.
Dun, dun, dun. And not the kind where you like have somebody come in and help you talk to a friend. That's also called mediation.
Yes, it is. Not, but I guess it's like somebody coming in between two things to help that relationship. Sounds kind of like a statistical mediation.
You know, I wonder if the Baron and Kenny, which is this 1986 article we're going to start by talking about, I wonder if one of them had to go to a mediation like with a colleague or there had some like disputes in the department that they just couldn't work out and had a mediator come in and they were like, you know, this is kind of like when you have two things that are related and you think a third thing sort of needs to get involved.
Yeah. Needs to take up some of that variance, some of that emotional variance.
Emotional variance. I think we probably only made everything much less clear at this
point. Okay, Jess, right. Why don't you get us into Baron and Kenny? I assume, Baron and Kenny is just like the way you describe, was it the first ever approach to mediation? It's like two people published a paper, or is that what happened? Why do we call it Baron and Kennedy? What is it?
This is, okay, to be fair and clear and, I don't know, full disclosure, I have actually no idea, but we'd call it the Baron and Kenny method. I don't know if they were actually first, but it took on the colloquial like description of this is what the method is. So I assume that that's the case, but I don't actually know.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I guess. Anyway, so it's called they call it the Baron and Kenny method, and it comes from this paper. And so what I have written in the notes here is picture three boxes. And so this is like the classic triangle that I bet most of our listeners have seen, where you see an X variable on the left-hand side over here in this English-speaking world. And then you have an arrow that's pointing to a Y that's on the right-hand side. Mm-hmm. And then somewhere above that in the middle is a variable that's labeled as an M. And there's an arrow going from X to M and from M to Y. So there's two arrows coming into Y, one that comes from the X and one that comes from the M. Those are your boxes.
Does M stand for mediator?
What? It does. It does. It does stand for mediator. So those are the three. That's sort of the basic model. And so the idea basically of this model is that there's a relationship between your X variable, your predictor, whatever it is, and your Y variable, your outcome, whatever that is. But that some part of it can be explained by this mediator, this third variable, this additional variable called the mediator, that they call the mediator. And so it's like, the real question that they have here is they talk about pathways. So there's, confusingly, there's three pathways and there's three boxes and three arrows. So there's a direct association between your X variable and your Y variable, which they call path C.
For funsies.
For funsies. And then the path from your X variable to your M variable, that's called A. And from your M variable to your Y variable, that's called B.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the whole basis of the Baron and Kenny method is you compare path C,
mm-hmm.
so the relationship between X and Y, when there's no mediator in the model.
Mm-hmm.
You compare that to path C once you've put the mediator in the model,
mm-hmm.
which then they call it path C prime.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the whole basis of the Baron and Kenny method is you compare path C without the mediator to path C prime with the mediator.
Mm-hmm.
And if you see that the new C prime variable is now zero, not associated, if X is now not associated with Y, then they would call it, quote unquote, full mediation.
Mm-hmm. You're completely taking away that effect, the effect
completely
of X on Y.
Completely taking away that effect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that if it's just smaller, just like looks kind of smaller, but isn't completely zero, then you would call that partial mediation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the foundation of this concept. And there's a lot of like sort of people will say you have to test this path and you have to test this path and you have to test this other path. And we can sort of talk about that if we want to. But sort of conceptually, the idea here is there's a relationship here. Sorry, APA nerds. There's a relation here.
Mm-hmm.
And the relation between X and Y can be explained by putting in this other variable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that, I mean, I guess that's really the basis of this foundation of mediation. And it's sort of based entirely on this path diagram type of model.
Yeah, just, is there a that's literally how I think about mediation, right? I think about that model and I think about like taking, reducing the direct effect, right? Reducing that effect of X on Y with another variable. So it's like kind of that other variable kind of accounts for that, you know, the relation between those two variables. Is there a broader definition of mediation or another way to define mediation, or like Baron and Kenny really kind of set how we think about statistical mediation, even if you're not doing the Baron and Kenny approach?
That's a great question. So I think they really defined that approach to begin with, but there are other ways to think about mediation. So we talk about it. They talked about it in terms of explaining that effect away.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But there's two other ways you can think about it. The first way I want to talk about it is opposite of how I wrote it in our notes. Sorry.
Are the other approaches the other ways of thinking about mediation are just entirely based on the other approaches that we're going to talk about after Baron and Kenny?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so. I mean, I guess that there's other ways to think about. Let me rephrase this. Okay. You asked me, are there other ways to think about mediation besides just Baron and Kenny? And that's definitely true. There's other types of mediation that exist. But another way that some people have talked about mediation is like, you could do it in all kinds of ways. I mean, the idea really is there's a relation here between two variables. And does it really exist, or can I explain it with something else?
Yeah, so that's what I meant. So like the concept of mediation, that's what it is. They just
that's what
depicted
it, is.
It. Okay, but that's what the concept of statistical mediation is, that or relationship mediation. Maybe. But
yes, maybe.
Statistical mediation at least. Okay, yeah.
Uh-huh.
There's a relation between two variables. Can you explain it with another variable?
Yeah, what's explaining that variable?
Yeah.
And so, you know, when I teach this in my statistics classes, I will teach this after I have taught about hierarchical regression.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know hierarchical regression? That's like you
yes.
put in. It's not stepwise regression, but you do. It's like regression in steps.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, statisticians are the worst.
We are. You guys are. I was like, what?
Make stuff in the worst way. It's also not hierarchical linear modeling. That's completely different, too.
That is completely different. Yes.
It is completely different.
But it's like the classic, you know, you put your confounders in, your covariates in, not confounders, your covariates in like one block. Like here, I'm going to put, you know, gender and age just to get rid of it, and then now I'm going to put in my other stuff. That would be in a hierarchical regression.
Right. So the way that I like to think about it when I teach it is I show them like, okay, now you have one outcome and you have one predictor. And how much variance have you explained in this predictor? And what's the strength of the relationship? What's the strength of the relation? Mm-hmm. Is this like, how big is the B weight? How big is that beta weight? What's the effect size of that relation between your X and your Y? And then you do it again with another predictor. And you're like, what about with this predictor? How strong is that? And you're not really comparing those two. But what you are comparing is then you put in them both at the same time. Mm-hmm. And once you have both of them in at the same time, the question in this hierarchical regression is, now what does it look like? So the first, you know, at first I put in age and it was associated with a beta weight of like 0.4. Mm-hmm. And then I put in vocabulary and my vocabulary was predictive at also 0.4. But when I put them in together, one of them is now 0.3 and the other one's 0.2. Mm-hmm. So that's just sort of like we're thinking about how are our predictors interrelated and how is that interrelationship? Damn it. I'm going to use it anyway.
Yeah, we're just going to roll
Screw
with
you
it.
Guys. Yeah. How does the interrelationship between these two predictors, like how do they go together when they're predicting this outcome? Mm-hmm. So it's similar to mediation in that you're sort of thinking about how the relation of one thing with Y is changing with the inclusion of something else. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I would call that mediation. Hmm. I would. It's not the fancy path model, but you've basically done a mediation.
It is the Logan approach to mediation.
I think it far predates me. Yeah.
Hierarchical regression? Yeah.
I don't know, a year or two, maybe. So I think that people may have done that, or you may have learned that in your stats class, even if you didn't actually learn mediation. You probably learned how to do a hierarchical regression. Or mm-hmm. at least you learned how to do a multiple regression.
A multiple regression. Yeah, it's a multiple regression, right? It's just putting in multiple variables.
I know. We teach it's like super fancy, but it's just like you do a regression with one predictor, then you do a regression with a lot of predictors, and then you compare them with your eyeballs. It's not even a statistical test. You're just like, that one was big, now it's small. What happens when you put them together? So we have then the hierarchical regression kind of approach, this like you're putting in variables one at a time. So it's accomplishing a similar goal. So those are two kinds of ways of thinking about how does the relation of an X with a Y change when you add something else.
What's the difference, you know, if you use the exact same data and you did the Barron and Kenny approach versus a hierarchical regression? Is there any difference?
There is.
You have like a single-headed arrow versus like a double-headed correlational arrow that's like assumed in the hierarchical regression.
You're exactly right. The difference is that the Barron and Kenny method sort of outlines in this path model approach that you are supposed to first fit path A. That's why I called path A. Yeah. So you do like why you're regressing the M variable on your X. So you're looking at the relation between your X and your M. Mm-hmm. And if that exists, then you look at the relation between your M and your Y. And does that exist? And then you look at the relation between, you know, then you're doing path C, and then you're doing path C prime. So you do, there's a series of steps that they want you to go through in order to fit this model. And a lot of people, when I try to explain like hierarchical regression is pretty dang similar, they'll say, yeah, but what about path A? Mm-hmm. And fair, you don't actually get an estimate of path A. In a hierarchical regression, you can look at a correlation between the two of them if you want, but you don't follow all of the processes to get there. The other thing that freaks people out here within the mediation space is that in the Barron and Kenny method, you have a very distinct, you have an X, you have an M, and you have a Y. Mm-hmm. And in the hierarchical regression space, like, the X variable and the M variable are kind of interchangeable.
Which one's which?
It's all like, there's no dichotomy here. We're all whatever. You can be whatever you want to be. Do you want to be a mediator today?
Don't put labels on me.
Don't
man.
Put labels on me. That's yes.
So that if you have them both in the model, you know, you if you run them each first and then you look at what it looks like together, then it's just that it's sort of the principle of any multiple regression is that there's shared variance among your predictors, mm-hmm. which is why your R squared, you know, variance explained in Y with predictor A and variance explained in Y and predictor B, you can't just add those together and get the multiple regression variance explained R squared coefficient.
Yeah, because there's overlap in variance between the predictors.
We both made a little sign of our Venn diagrams.
We did both do a Venn diagram with our hands. Can you tell we talk a lot about accounting for variance to other people? When I'm talking between variables, it's a Venn diagram. And then I have my pizza. Yeah. It's just a variance of one variable. Yes. As we continue to do hand motions that you all can't see. Yes.
You can't see. Sorry about that. That's funny.
Yeah. So it's probably like we're talking about this like, oh, it's just a statistical test that you do. Right. But mediation almost is kind of like a capital M mediation. Mm. Right. It's like a bigger thing. And I wonder if it's become a bigger thing. Like it's like how you set theories. Right. How, you know, you make conclusions, you know, and. You know, was it Baron and Kenny that made it that way? Because we've got boxes and we say, this is the M, this is the mediator, this is explaining this relationship. So this is, you know, like, did they make it into this bigger thing where when you think about it in the hierarchical regression space, it's just some predictors and those predictors are correlated with each other. And so they kind of that kind of messes around with the how much each one predicts. You know, explains variance in the other. That just seems a little bit like, oh, yeah, we're just throwing some predictors into a model versus this is the mediator.
This is a really good question. And I think I'm going to just make some stuff up.
Yeah. So I'm spitballing here. So
yeah. I think that that's a really good idea. And there's probably some historians of science that know the answer to that question. Mm-hmm. I'm not one of them.
No.
But I think that they... Probably what it speaks to is that people are lazy when they read papers.
Oh, tell me more.
Well, if you're skimming through a paper mm-hmm. and you see a figure that's got three variables and a little triangle, you can pretty quickly grasp what that theoretical model is
mm-hmm.
much more quickly than if you're reading a paragraph. And maybe it's more memorable to some people what that model looks like. So it could be, I don't think they did it on purpose, but I think that maybe the way that it was uptaken by the field at large made it so sort of as a science communication tool, it's very effective as a mm-hmm. science communication tool as like, what is predicting what? Here you go. Here's what it looks like. So that's my guess.
Do they, in the Baron and Kenny approach, I'm trying to remember back in the day when I learned that approach, you know, is there some sort of test for the reverse mediation? Like, are you supposed to do the mediation and then test the alternate, like switch the M and the X to see if it works the other way? Because if it works the other way, then it really does. That's kind of like the hierarchical regression. Like it's a either way, there's no one mediator. They could be whatever. Don't label me, bro.
You know, I don't think that that's in the original, but I didn't reread it before we started recording.
Okay.
So
yeah.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I that would be a criticism sort of generally of a structural equation model approach that oftentimes people say you need to, you know, test alternative directional hypotheses. But, and I think that that's, we'll get a little bit into the criticisms and pushback on this method in a little bit later. But I do think that that would be certainly one way you could test whether your association holds.
Yeah, or whether the dominance of that mediator is being the mediator, where it's just, you know, a correlated variable.
Mm-hmm. It turns out that everything we're doing is just correlational most of the time.
You know, that's how I live my life, Jess.
I know.
I do see the whole world from a correlational perspective. It's a curse of being an individual differences researcher.
Well, then let's talk about one other piece of this.
Okay.
Another way you can think about mediation. So this Baron and Kenny method got some pushback. Not necessarily pushback, I guess, at first, but it has gotten pushback, which we'll talk about. But it had other people started thinking about other ways you can interpret these models, and that maybe the C to C prime isn't great. There's something called the Sobel test, which people started doing to sort of test these mediation models and the effects that they're positing. And then a group of folks started thinking about the other way you're thinking about this is that it's not that. So we originally thought X was directly related to Y, but maybe it's actually that X is related to M and M is related to Y. So there's no, this is where they say there's no direct effect of X on Y, but X affects M and M affects Y.
Yeah.
So that becomes the indirect effect approach.
Oh.
Which is, I mean, it's the same kind of thing, but conceptually it's real different.
Yeah, that's what I was like. I think I maybe learned Baron and Kenny from that perspective. Would that have been possible? I don't know.
Yeah, it might. Yeah, I mean, it might be. I mean, it depends on where you focus your energy. But Baron and Kenny really, really throws down, goes hard on C and C prime.
Okay.
They're like the difference between the path with the mediator and the path without the moderate mediator.
Okay. Versus thinking X is related to Y through M.
X is related to Y through M. That's another way to think about it. So there are some other tests of the indirect effect that people started looking at to sort of determine how do you calculate that indirect effect. Oh, and then there's some really cool extensions that people have done in terms of like multi-level mediation and what happens if you have your X variable is about students and your Y variable is about students, but your M variable is about teachers. How does that work? That's called a 1-2-1 mediation. And then there's other kinds of equations you can follow to look at that. So people have sort of really done some interesting work in estimating all of these different types of relations in the mediation space and looking both at the direct effect and the indirect effect across that model.
Okay.
Which is really, I think, is really interesting.
Maybe some like practical examples.
Yeah, good idea, because we have definitely been talking a lot about X's and Y's and M's, and that's exactly great.
You did introduce our handy favorite variables vocabulary.
I didn't say reading this time.
No, you did, but it was assumed.
I actually didn't have a Y, so.
No, yeah.
It turns out it's going to be like, have you seen those things where they talk about Bob Ross at the end? You look at Bob Ross's paintings and it's like, it actually was just one scene and like a journey through time and space. No, okay. It's fine. It's going to end up being that this whole podcast was actually about predicting reading from vocabulary. The joke landed without the Bob Ross reference.
It did, yeah.
Mwahaha. So I, in thinking about this, I just taught this to students this semester. Mm-hmm. And when I was looking around for examples, I very selfishly pulled an example that I worked on because I know it really well and didn't have to learn it.
Yeah, that makes
so
sense.
I'm going to do the same thing again.
Let's do it here.
So maybe we can link to the paper in the notes.
Okay.
Sure. But the paper that I pulled is a paper that, and it has to do with math. Imagine that. So we have math and we have language, and then we have something specific called math language. So the concept of this basically is that there was some work out there demonstrating that preschool math skills were predictive of later, like kindergarten, early literacy skills above and beyond previous early literacy skills.
Okay.
So like rhyming in K and rhyming in pre-K and then rhyming in grade one. Or maybe it might have been decoding in grade one. So anyway, there's a lot of people were sort of going, okay, why in the world would math predict literacy. We could imagine the other way around, where it's like literacy skills could be important for your decoding or understanding of what's happening in math. But like being better at addition shouldn't make it easier for you to read above and beyond your previous ability to read.
Mm-hmm.
So people were, there's a lot of sort of theorizing literature about why that might that be. And so then we were talking about this in terms of this construct of math-specific language. So the idea of math-specific language is that a lot of math, particularly these like little kids, a lot of that math is things like knowing the word add or more and less. Those are just vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
And vocabulary we could see as being related to later reading. That made a lot of sense. So the question that we come up with, and it's a very clearly a mediation, is the relation between math, early math ability and later reading ability explained by or mediated by math language?
Mm-hmm.
So can we explain that whole relation that we see between early math and later reading by this math language construct? Okay, that's our mediation premise.
Mm-hmm.
And so to test that, we sort of look at math predicting later reading, controlling for all of the early reading stuff first. Mm-hmm. And then sort of examine that estimate. We look at the C pathway, which was, I'm going to pull one up and look at this one. So with one of these, we have it's early math ability is predictive of phonological awareness. And the coefficient on that one was 0.25.
Okay.
So, and that was controlling for previous phonological awareness ability. But then in our next model, now we add in math language. And so math ability predicts math language, and math language predicts phonological awareness, but math ability no longer predicts phonological awareness. That's
okay.
No longer a statistically significant pathway. So we sort of show through this mediation model that X no longer predicts Y once we've put our M in the model.
Mm-hmm.
And this
mm-hmm.
is with a literal path model. So
it's
very strictly Baron and Kenny type approach. We did also look at the indirect effect of that, and unsurprisingly, it was a statistically significant indirect effect, suggesting that, you know, math is predictive of language, and then language is predictive of our PA model.
Okay.
So that was there's an example of the very explicit Baron and Kenny one.
Yeah, that the vocabulary is the piece explaining that relation between math to reading.
Between math and reading. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then so what about you? I know that you don't often, like when we were talking about this, you were like, I don't think I do mediation modeling.
No, I would have said up till a few years ago that I had never done a mediation myself. I think I've been a co-author on a couple of mediation papers, but like a very middling co-author, you know, just involved very, very loosely. Uh-huh. But my like leading a paper like out of my lab, I've never really done a traditional statistical mediation model. Like the only time I did Baron and Kenny was in like my undergrad research methods class, you know.
Sure.
So, and I really felt pretty, firm in that belief until a few years ago when, my colleague, Colleen Ganley, I think I said that around her, and she's like, you know that we have a paper together where you actually very expressly did a mediation. I was like, what? But it wasn't a Baron and Kenny approach, and we never called it mediation. So here's what I did. And, you know, it is technically the concept of mediation.
Okay.
So we're going to stay in the math space here.
Oh, all right. It's a math podcast today.
Yeah. I had a real bee in my bonnet about the home math environment. So it's this idea of what parents are doing in the home that's related to kind of maybe like directly related or indirectly related to like skill building that's important for later math ability. So, you know, anything from like, do you do puzzles or play with Legos with your kids? So kind of the spatial skills that might be related to later math, or expressly like, do you, you know, practice addition problems with your kids? You know, one ball plus one ball. We have two balls, you know.
Oh,
And so you can ask parents to rate like how much they do those types of activities, and it tends to be correlated with math outcomes in kids. But, you know, as a behavioral geneticist, I think about things like who are the parents who are doing this, who are more likely to do this type of math activity with their kids in the home. They're parents who themselves are probably have higher math skills and have then, you know, passed on the genes related to math skills. And so I've always been kind of, I was for a while, until I wrote this paper and some other stuff afterwards, but, you know, convinced that really, you know, this effect that we thought we were seeing between the home math environment and kids' outcomes was really just like confounded by, you know, parents' own genetically related math skills. Mm. And so I wanted to test that. I was like, the relation between the home math environment to children's math outcomes is actually explained by parent math ability.
Oh my God. Literally mediation.
I know. But you see how I got there in my head, not thinking about it as mediation.
I do.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. So yeah, I never once, we didn't use mediation words. I just never thought of it as mediation. It was just like, is the effect there? I say it out loud. It's so silly to say out loud based on everything else we've talked about. Because everyone is like, what do you mean you didn't use mediation words? I literally was like, does this effect go away when I put in parent math skills into the model? Anyway, the whole paper.
Sarah, does the effect go away when you put it in the model?
It doesn't, and not everything goes away, no. That's what convinced me that I was like, okay, there is some kind of direct effect, Jess, okay? There was a direct effect still. C prime did not go all the way down to zero. Never did those words enter into that paper or into my thinking about it. But yes, I threw everything in the kitchen sink at that darn effect. I really thought I was going to make it go away. And we didn't fully make it go. I mean, I put all the goodies in there. Socioeconomic status. Mm-hmm. I put in parent math anxiety. So like math attitudes. Ooh, I put in parent math skills. I mean, we threw everything in it. We put them all in together individually. I was testing all, as it turns out, potential mediators. And I did do it in like a path model, structural equation modeling approach. Just... never called it a mediation ever.
you just really like variance explained.
That's it. I was literally just trying to explain variance, Jess.
You're like, I don't care about the size of these pathways. I just want to know about explained variance.
That's it. No. Other than I was really looking to see if that one pathway went to zero.
Anyway. My gosh, that's terrific.
There you go. So, as it turns out, I have expressly tested a mediation model.
Listen, I feel like maybe that means you're just really good at inventing the wheel. You know?
No, it's a conceptual idea, right? Like, oh, there's this known relation. Can I make it go away with these other things, right? Like, you know, I don't think that's actually a real effect. I think it's due to something else. And so let's make it go away. That's how I got there.
Here's the thing. We just need more... I don't know what it is. There's some there that we don't have that we didn't go, you know what? This is a method. You know what I mean?
I mean,
what does it take? What do you need to have in order to be like, here's a thing that probably happens and generalizing it up is probably going to work in a lot of situations. And now call it the me method. Dun, dun, dun. You know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
I mean, I was just drawing arrows. And circles, boxes.
Maybe we should look back through your other papers and see what other statistics you've developed.
How many other times I've reinvented mediation.
Or what else have you come up with? Yeah. Who knows? Maybe you have other great ideas.
I don't know. I've probably got a couple moderation papers out there I don't even know about.
That'll be another episode. We'll talk about those.
So, yes, I have. That's my example of a mediation. But I came at it not expressly to be like, this is going to be a mediator. I purposely was like, what can I do to make that C pathway go away? I never called it the C pathway, but that's, you know. And so it, in some ways, it was kind of like the indirect effect. We did talk about the indirect effects of the parent stuff on the children's outcomes through the home math environment. I know it's ridiculous now. You know, it wasn't that 2000 teens. You know,
framing is powerful.
It was a wild time back then.
I will tell you that as a person who consults with a lot of people about their statistics, I would much rather have that happen than the other way around, which is a lot of times what people will do is they'll come to me and say, I want to do a mediation. Mm. And I'll say, okay, but like, what do you want to test? And then they'll describe something that's sort of like, maybe like you could call that a mediation, but I don't think that's actually answering anything interesting. And so I would far rather have people not call it by whatever name a statistician has come up with and have it be authentic to the question than like try to shoehorn this model in some place that doesn't fit, you know?
So authentic that many years later your co-author was like, you did the mediation paper, Sarah. I'm like, what?
I'm like, no, I don't do those.
Exactly. And God forbid, Jess, it was cross-sectional. Okay, I'll just lay it out there.
Well, let's use that as a segue to address some negativity. Well, I said addressing negativity, so maybe it's like an elephant in the room, or maybe it's like a tiny mouse in the room. I don't know. But it's like a lot of people, there's a huge pushback against these models. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen this. I mean, I see it on Twitter a lot. I've seen it on Twitter for years of people being like, can you believe these dumb people are fitting mediations? Idiots. Yeah.
I've seen it so much that even now, you know, now I'm an editor of this journal, and so many of the papers I get in are mediation that I had to like check in and like, where are we as a field in thinking about mediation right now?
Yeah. So I think that a lot of the criticism about mediation comes from, I think it can be best described in the indirect effect approach, because it's real easy. It's real easy to go, well, if X, instead of X predicting Y, directly, X predicts Y through M, even in the Baron and Kenny space, they talk about it like causal arrows. So they'll say X causes M and M causes Y.
Taking that weird definition of those arrows, I guess the classic definition of those arrows, actually.
Yeah. And I think that all of the criticism of these models can be boiled down to that is probably a gross oversimplification, so please don't come at me and screenshot my tweets and say I'm an idiot. But like, I do think a lot of it comes down to that, because the problem is in the interpretation. So the problem comes down to, I think, the idea that if I'm looking at this model, like the model that I talked about with math language and reading, is that we didn't say math causes math language, and math language is what causes reading.
Mm-hmm.
What we're saying is that there's an association here, and it can be explained by this other variable. And so I think that where people get into trouble is this overgeneralization of these boxes and arrows, which is essentially just a correlational, it's just a correlation. It's just a correlation matrix. It's another way of parsing out correlations. And the people start interpreting them as this causes that and that causes this. So as long as we're staying away from the causal framework, I think people could be okay. Unless you have an actual randomized control trial in there, or some other, you know, heavily ways of actually putting in causal methods. If you're using causal methods in your research design, then you can talk about causality in these models. But otherwise, you really can't.
Now, I have seen some people even go kind of further and been like, okay, Jess, I hear you. Yes, you're right. Let's not use causal language. That's like obvious. Like, let's not do that. But like, even you saying that this variable is, you know, associated with this variable, you're still kind of misinterpreting those arrows. Like, you're still kind of, you know, giving the idea that one kind of leads to the other. Not in a causal sense, obviously. No, but kind of. You know, I've seen some people be like, they're like uncomfortable with that entire idea. And I think that's where they throw away regression. But then that also gets wrapped in like why some people don't like path model or structural equation modeling or even regression broadly, you know, that it's still sort of association still kind of has a little bit of a causal thinking.
People may still think about it in a causal way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. I haven't seen as much of that, but I think I got burned really early with some lazy language in a, like my very first paper. Mm-hmm. And so at that point, I started being a lot more vigilant about the way that I talk about correlations.
Yeah. I even notice it sometimes, like when I'm reading other people, like if I'm like reviewing my students' work, that, you know, I think everybody is pretty well trained, you know, in our program at least, or like, you know, like not use causal language. So you don't see that all the way through, but then you see like the conclusions or the discussion section talking about the conclusions of the effect only in one direction. So they're not using causal language, but then all of the, like, even like the review of like how, whatever this might fit into the broader literature is always just assuming the one way. And I'm always
and
like,
sometimes even like, and so therefore we need to give kids math language instruction because it would improve their
intervene
vocabulary.
On it. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we do see a lot of that sometimes. And that's something that I push back on for sure in reviews as well. Mm-hmm. So I maybe that's where a lot of this concern is coming from, is that even if you're using it right, it still can imply people are still going to interpret it wrong. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's tough.
Okay, so that's a little bit of the cut. Yeah, don't use causal language. Even you got arrows pointing to a side, there's nothing causal about this.
No, nothing at all.
The variance could be flowing backwards against that arrow. Who knows?
That's right. It's just a glorified correlation matrix. It's a correlation matrix with arrows pointing on things.
Yes, just because it's a single-headed arrow, it could be a double-headed arrow. What about single time point mediation or cross-sectional mediation?
I have no problem with either of those things. I have absolutely no problem with that.
That is more controversial on the internet.
Yeah, go on. Tell me more.
Well, it just feels like the internets are pretty firmly like, we don't do single time point mediation.
Ah. I don't know. I mean, but we don't do single time point mediation because people think it's causal. And if you're trying to talk about to be fair, the idea of the mediation model is that you should have temporal precedence. God, statisticians are the fucking worst. Temporal precedence, as in it comes first in time. That's all that means.
Yeah,
it's like one thing has to come in time before the other thing, conceptually or theoretically. But that also actually holds for regression. We just kind of ignore it most of the time.
Yeah.
Don't you think people do regression with single time points all the time?
I mean, I would counter that probably 99% of the literature is like that. As somebody who does longitudinal modeling, it's like, why does nobody do longitudinal modeling?
Yeah. I know. Or I was looking at some proposal this week where I was like, I feel like what you really want to talk about here is change. And they were like, oh, you're right. It's like where they were before and where they were now. I was like, mm-hmm. Because I really do think it doesn't happen as often if you're not in the developmental science space.
Yeah. Mm.
People who measure development, hot news, are good. They think about measuring development.
Across time.
Across time. So I think, I mean, I would not be surprised if I were to see a single time point mediation. I would not be surprised at all. I wouldn't.
Hmm.
Would I be mad about it? I don't know.
I mean, certainly, you don't want any of the causal language, but interesting. Yeah, I don't know enough about the arguments to argue back with you. I just feel like if there was somebody who knew more, they would be arguing with you. So let's pretend like everybody's listening to an argument back to you about how we should never do single time point mediation. And I guess know that is a strong opinion by many. Many on my Twitter feed.
Yeah, I think I do think it's all caught up in the same argument of that people think that mediation is causal. They just think that it's a causal method. Mm. And so you can't have causality without having that temporal precedence. You can't have it. That's a requirement of anything being a cause of something else. Something has to come first in time. So if what we're thinking about is like just a general, I mean, like a correlation, I'm trying to think about whether you could interpret this in like a correlation matrix space. I absolutely think that you could. You just can't, maybe you can't call it exactly the same thing, or you can't interpret it exactly the same way. But if I'm trying to say that there's no reason I couldn't have done what I just talked to you about with math language, well, I guess I couldn't have, because I was like controlling for the previous time point was pretty key to that.
Yeah.
But you certainly could do it if you weren't necessarily controlling for the previous time point, I think. If you're just in a correlational space. Are these two things correlated, and are they still correlated when I control for this other thing?
Yeah, I know. It sounds very reasonable.
I think it's reasonable, but I think that you couldn't just pluck general mediation language and drop it in, maybe in the same way that you might be able to if you had something a little more causal. Oh, this is going to be an interesting episode. The response to this.
Let's see if we get some hate mail.
Get some hate mail about mediation.
Yeah, just know out there, and generally there are some, you know, I talked to other journal editors. There are some, like, journals that just will, as a matter of course, will not, like developmental journals that will not take anything that's expressly using mediation language with single time point.
Yeah. I mean, I could see how that could happen given the sort of context of the method and its development. And I think, I also think that some of this gets some pushback because of the ease, how easy it has become to do the model.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? There are macros that exist now, or, you know, sort of plugins or easy ways of quickly running a mediation, and can be like super complex, like six mediators and a moderated mediator and mediated moderators and all kinds of wacky things that you can do with just like click, 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 run.
Mm-hmm.
That I think some of the pushback on these models has been that advanced before the collective knowledge of the people who were using it was advanced. And so a lot of times we'll see models that don't necessarily fit what you would theorize being pressed forward, because it's so simple to produce the results of the model. And I think that can be a huge source of issues. I know that when I publish sort of like translational communication pieces around new statistical methods, I often get pushback on that. Like, you're making this too easy and people aren't going to understand it. And if people are going to do this, they're going to follow these steps and they're going to try to interpret it and it's going to be wrong. And I think I think we have seen that happen with mediation. I think that is exactly what happened with mediation. It got too easy to do. Too many complicated models can be done too easily, and people are interpreting them and using them. People are using them and maybe not quite interpreting them right.
Also, maybe another potential controversial take.
I know. I'm having all kinds of hot takes today. Maybe people will stop listening after you were funny, and then they'll just be like, oh, this was a great episode.
You mentioned actually macros, and maybe I'd love for you to talk about this process macro because I see people talk about it. I don't know what it is, other than I think maybe it's specific to SPSS, but I don't know. Tell me about
they have the process macro is for mediation and moderation.
Okay.
And it's in SPSS and in SAS, and I believe also in R.
Oh,
they have a version. And it's, they've developed a really handy, beautiful M plus style. I don't know. When I was a graduate student, the M plus manual was a thing. I mean, it still is. But the M plus, physical M plus manual I had, and I would just flip through it for fun and look at the pictures of the boxes and arrows and
to think about what type of models you could run. Mm-hmm. Me too.
Yeah. Would do that all the time. And so the process macro user guide is the same thing. Just a bunch of models. Just boxes and arrows, and you can flip through them and go, oh, that would be cool. Oh, that would be cool. That would be cool. What is this mediated moderation thing that you're talking about? Let's look at that. And how could I fit that? And so I think that those models are very, very, can get very, very complex. There's like, I don't remember how many, because I didn't look at it most recently, but I think the simple model, what it will do for you is you tell it what your X variable is, your Y variable is, and your M variable is. And it will tell you, here's the direct effect. You know, here's your C path. Here's your C prime path. Here's the indirect effect.
Okay.
So it gives you automatically all of that information, which is fantastic. It's so great and so easy to use that you can get all that information so quickly without having to run the path models in some third, you know, piece of software. So on that aspect, it's fantastic. It's really great and easy to use. And I give it to my students all the time to use because it's such a user-friendly platform. And I think that its user-friendliness is what it gets pushback on.
Mm.
So it's very user-friendly, which is great when you have data that align with what a mediation is and you're really good at interpreting what a mediation is and you know what a mediation is and you know how to explain what you're seeing and your question actually fits a mediation question. Where it breaks down is when people have, the models get more and more and more complex and people try to fit them even though maybe it doesn't make sense. And maybe it doesn't fit the actual needs of that model, the data don't actually match the needs of the model. So I think that the process macros are great and I highly recommend them if you haven't tried them. They're lovely. But maybe stop after the first one.
Well, you know I don't like to do mediation models. I've never done one, so.
Mediation. Who needs it?
Who needs it? Other than when you expressly have a mediation research question.
And maybe what we're learning today is if you do have a mediation question, fit it some other way and use non-causal language and just fit it in a multiple step regression or HLM. Fit it in multiple steps in that. And then you can answer your questions without using the inflammatory language of mm-hmm. mediation. Mm-hmm. Oh, poor mediation.
I know. Well, I know that clarified for me, mediation.
Yeah, we get it?
Yeah, I think so.
Now you know you've done one? That's helpful. We always start there. I think, I do think it's a useful framework. I think it can be important. We do often have questions, I think, that align with these kinds. Like we have research questions that will often align with this type of model. I think as long as it just suffers the same criticisms, I think, of many models, which is it can be put into practice where it shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. It can be misinterpreted. So those would be the things I think to watch out for when you're fitting a mediation model.
Otherwise, go forth and explain some variance with an M variable.
With an M variable. Which one's the M variable? It's up to you. Thanks for listening to this episode of Within and Between. For information about this and all our episodes, you can visit our website, withinandbetweenpod.com. Connect with us on Twitter at @within_between, where you can send us questions about developmental science and developmental sciencing. See you next time.